The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church and the world. Just love. Just love God. Just love yourself. Just love your neighbor, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. As we begin our new year, we do so in the week preceding the celebration of the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. And so I'm delighted that as part of our show this week, we're going to be speaking about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. And we're not going to be speaking to one of those old guys like me, but we're going to be speaking to somebody who I suspect, I will ask Keith in a few moments, I suspect probably was born well after Dr. Martin Luther King died. And so what I want to know, and you know, somebody suggested that we have on the show kind of an old guy or an old woman like me to talk about Dr. Martin Luther King. And I said, why? I said, you know, we remember that. I said, I want to find out if that legacy still continues and what it means for people who are significantly younger and, to be perfectly frank, listeners out there who might be my age, who are more important than us for the future of this country, because they have a future, we got a past. And so I want to know what they're thinking about it. So that's what we're going to explore in a little bit today. And then the other topic that we're going to explore later on in the show is that wonderful topic of New Year's resolutions. And now that we're about a couple of weeks into the new year, and we've all broken our New Year's resolutions, now we're going to give you a chance to restart. And we're going to talk with Tim Herrera, who is the Smart Living editor at the New York Times, about New Year's resolutions. And everybody gets a restart. But what we're going to talk with him about is not making dumb New Year's resolutions that we don't have any possibility of keeping, but making smart ones so that we can actually keep those resolutions and actually improve our lives. So I'm delighted that our first guest, Keith Gerent, is in the studio and is going to be so we can talk to him. And Tim Herrera also is going to join us here in the studio. So as we begin the new year, I'm delighted with the guests that we have. And so let me go to Keith Gerent, who is a marketing communications major and a Pierre Toussaint scholar at the University of Connecticut. Keith, Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us on Just Love today.
Definitely. Happy New Year.
Thank you. So, Keith, you know, you're a Pierre Toussaint scholar. I think probably a number of our listeners may not know what a Pierre Toussaint scholar is, and they probably don't even know who Pierre Toussaint is. So kind of begin by giving us a little bit of background. What are the Pierre Toussaint scholars, and a little bit about Pierre Toussaint?
Okay, so let's starting off with background about Pierre Toussaint.
Okay.
Pierre Toussaint was from Haiti. He was a slave, and he came over to America, and in America he became free. So
about what years? When did he do it? A few years ago, or
it wasn't a few years ago. It was a while ago, but you know,
even before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. So, with that being said, he essentially,
I think it was like the 19th century.
19th century.
The 1800s, mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so long time ago. So anyway, so he was a slave.
So, and then from there, as a free man, he lived in the city, and essentially he opened his home to help with the first orphanage for African Americans and black kids as well, and opened his home to the sick and the poor, and essentially did various community service and work throughout the community. With that being said, he's also the only lay and African American person buried in St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool as well. And yeah, it just goes to speak to his legacy of how, yes, he was a slave in the beginning, and when he came to New York, he was a free man. And he used, instead of using those his past as negative emotions, he used it as positivity and giving back to the community, helping orphans, helping those that were in need, that were sick, that were poor.
What was his occupation?
His occupation was being a caregiver, essentially, and
no,
being
come on. What was how did he make his money? Because he was a slave,
mm-hmm.
and then he was freed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he became a pretty rich guy, didn't he?
Yes.
So how did he make his money? Come on, this is a test.
He came from working.
I'll tell you. All of our listeners there who can see the beautiful television pictures, I am bald, so I don't have any hair at all.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He did hair.
Yeah, he was a hairdresser.
I knew that.
You do hair?
No, oh, but I wish.
And he did hair of rich people.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like today, if you're a pretty good hairdresser and you do the hair of rich people, you make a pretty good living. And he made a pretty good living. So not only was he kind of altruistic and he kind of helped other people, but he was a rich guy who did it. So, yes. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's again, to me, and this is my saying it, not you, is every now and then today in the world, we kind of make a big divide between, you know, the rich people, the one percenters, and everybody else. But I kind of think what Pierre Toussaint is an example of is, hey, okay, some people got more money, some people got less money. But even if you got a lot of money, you still can be compassionate. You can still be altruistic.
Mm-hmm.
You can still reach out to people. Being rich or being poor doesn't determine your attitude and your stuff. So anyway, I'm going to give you a 95 because you need a little help figuring out he was a hairdresser, but that's okay. So now tell us about the scholar part of it, that you're a Pierre Toussaint scholar. What's that mean?
So as a Pierre Toussaint scholar, it's someone that's a student that's been exemplary through high school and also been very helpful and influential throughout their church parish as a youth in the in the ministry. So specifically for me, I was an altar server at my church at St. Charles Borromeo, and currently now when I come back from school, I read at Mass as a lecture sometime and things like that.
You know what that reminds me a little bit of? Because I was watching, the kind of college playoff series the other day, mm-hmm. and they kept talking about the Walter Payton Award, which is kind of the NFL's Man of the Year. And I think, if I'm right, you correct me,
mm-hmm.
I think it's given to the football player who exemplifies community service and giving back. Am I right about that?
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're kind of telling me is the Pierre Toussaint scholars, they're kind of expected to give back to their communities?
Yes. So we're expected to give back to our communities, also to help each other grow as well. So the scholarship is not just, you know, you receive your aid for school. It's right. also a family. So we do have our two meetings. We meet in the winter for our winter workshop and our summer workshop. And from there, we build the community together because we work good together and being strong enough to make sure we're fine so that we can also help others.
Well, and again, I'm kind of proud of a couple of things. One, at the annual Pierre Toussaint dinner here in New York this year, they chose to commemorate and remember Catholic Charities in our centennial year. And what we did kind of to reciprocate, we established a Catholic Charities Pierre Toussaint Scholarship to continue that work and to expand it a little bit. So I'm really, really proud of that. We're speaking with Keith Garant, who is a scholar who is a Pierre Toussaint Scholar at the University of Connecticut. And we're speaking about kind of the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, who was born much after Pierre Toussaint and before Keith was even born. So we're speaking about that. But I got to ask one other thing. It says scholar. So are you one of those smart guys?
I would like to think.
Tom, we don't like these smart guys on our show because they show me up. They're smarter than me, so I don't like all of these scholar guys. All right, so we got a scholar guy here. Okay, so scholar guy, you tell me about Dr. Martin Luther King. So I'm not going to do the test on this, but he was assassinated in the late 1960s. So it's pretty close, and I think, isn't it? It's the 50th anniversary of his assassination this year. So you weren't even born then.
Mm-hmm.
So, but your parents probably were born then,
yes.
Weren't they? So tell me a little bit about what Dr. Martin Luther King means to you.
So I'd like to start off essentially with, first, I was introduced to Dr. Martin, about information about Dr. Martin Luther King through my parents, because they actually lived it, they were there, things of that nature. And specifically to me, growing up, I had to interpret it from history, essentially. Right. And my interpretation, and I can say I'm pretty sure a lot of young adults my age feel the same way. Martin Luther King was like a beacon of light for the generation while he was alive. And somehow, some way, he's still a beacon of light for us. He is used in a lot of conversations that come up between students at different schools. Dr. Martin Luther King is still brought up today. Even Dr. Martin Luther King Day has become a recognized holiday, which is very important because it shows that his legacy still continues and that his legacy will never die, because we are continuously making sure we're trying to be just as he was, or be even better and making sure that we continue his view and vision. So to me, essentially, Dr. Martin Luther King is a beacon of light, was a beacon of light, and his legacy lives through us. So we have to, as the youth, continue to make it go on to our kids and so on and so forth. And the legacy left behind is being a caregiver, making sure you're not only okay, but that your peers, your family, everyone around you is okay. The betterment of humanity as a whole. So, yeah.
So, Keith, but you said you kind of learned about Dr. King from your parents.
Yes.
Do they have a little bit of a different perspective than you?
Mm-hmm. So let's go with different things that happened during Martin Luther King, like peaceful protests.
Right.
Since they lived it, it was difficult for them. They were more upset. But I would say in terms of my...
Now, did they grow up in the North or the South?
In the North.
Okay.
So I would say in my perspective and the idea of like peaceful protests and things of that, it's something that a lot of students will write about in essays, will think about it, but we never actually put into our thoughts that, oh, people actually live this. It might sound easy to do and easy to act out from writing it and reading about it, but our parents actually lived through it. So I would say for them, following Dr. Martin Luther King was the primary goal and stuff, because of him being a beacon of light and them understanding his philosophies and things like that. But it was also harder for them because they were actually living and being tested through the trials and tribulations actually within that era, where we're not essentially going through those issues at the same time, but we are aware of it. And it's just thinking about how they felt versus how we felt.
So I don't know if you thought about this, and the thought just came to me, so I'm going to ask you about it. So you're right about the protests, the peaceful protests to do that. In your head, do you see parallels, differences between kind of the current Black Lives Matter movement and some of those rallies and some of those things and Dr. Martin Luther King?
So essentially, the Black Lives Matter rallies and campaigns and things like that, they do parallel with Martin Luther King in the sense that it's about bringing awareness to equality among all people and all races. And specifically for this is Black Lives Matter for various reasons. I believe it does align with it per se, and obviously the positive and everything of making sure our voices are heard, different things are passed and things of that nature. So it does align.
So we're speaking with Keith Curran, who is a smart guy. He's a Pierre Toussaint scholar at the University of Connecticut. He's a marketing and communications major there. And the Pierre Toussaint scholars are named in honor of Pierre Toussaint, who was a Haitian slave, came to the United States, was freed, made a fair amount of money for his time as a hairdresser, and was incredibly outgoing and service-oriented to help people. And I do think one of the things that's very interesting is, and Keith, you can correct me if I'm wrong, he was freed, and his slave owner families came on some hard times after they freed him.
Yes.
And he didn't abandon them. Even though he was now a free person, he still continued to help them, mm-hmm. not as a slave, which, you know, that to me says a whole lot about either forgiveness or giving back, or how one can use what is an oppressive situation and be transformative about it.
Yes.
So, you know, the question I want to ask, because obviously Dr. Martin Luther King's legacy had to do with civil rights, and pretty much in many ways it was about the Afro-American community getting the right to vote, to participate in equally in various parts of society. I wonder, you know, from you're on a campus in Connecticut, in which is a very diverse campus, in which there are students of different racial, ethnic, cultural backgrounds. I'm interested in how that legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King might be seen by students with different ethnic or racial background. Mm-hmm. Yeah, got a sense of that?
Yes. So essentially, Dr. Martin Luther King was a catalyst in a sense. So it started off originally as making sure African Americans had a voice and being able to vote and things of that nature. But it also branched out as a whole for everyone to be equal and everyone to benefit in those attributes and qualities. So I believe other students of other races as well and ethnicities are benefiting and also following Dr. Martin Luther King's light as well.
Do you think it has, you know, does it mean anything, residence? I mean, I think, you know, do the Hispanic students, the Asian students, the white students on campus, does it mean anything to them?
I would say yes. It does mean something to them because it's also their history. Even though they're not African American, they are humans, and they're African American. I mean, they're humans as well. So it's part of their history and history of the world. So it is important to them because it involved them as well as us.
You know, that's very interesting. And I have had some conversations with people, and it's just interesting that we live in a society in which race matters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, in many ways, has, you know, it defines sometimes opportunities, it defines discrimination, it matters, whether it's whatever. And I mean, one of the things I often talk about, I say, which is interesting, obviously the election of President Barack Obama was something which I believe, you know, the Afro-American community took great pride in, that there was somebody who was elected president who shared some of those characteristics. I found it a little bit interesting because what I would sometimes say in conversations to be, well, you know, I'm pretty proud of him too because he's half white. You know, it's a very kind of race does matter, and it plays out in different ways. So I think what you said, you know, while Dr. Martin Luther King was, you know, fighting in that moment for the political, the voting rights of Afro-Americans, I think, as you said, people of other ethnicities, other cultures, you know, by extension, can see that fight for freedom, that fight for equality, can relate to issues that relate to their particular struggles in their particular situations also.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you now, is from your perspective,
yes.
Obviously Dr. Martin Luther King is, you know, had to deal with the issues of voting and political equality, civil rights, things of that issue. What are the issues that you see as the issues that need to be confronted by your generation to make our world a better place?
So an issue currently with our generation, I would say along the lines of education, essentially. So a lot of underrepresented areas in our world are, well, New York, we can say for New York right now,
right.
A lot of students in underrepresented areas, their education systems aren't as strong. And that just comes back to the community funding certain communities and making sure that the education within those schools is something that is building our youth, because it does start from education does start from home with your parents, but it also takes a community to raise a child. So if we're working on educational programs and funding education for better for those underrepresented schools as well, from youth, as they become young adults, they're better suited for the world. And overall, I think that will just help Americans and youth in general be able to work together, because they're all gaining knowledge and all becoming knowledgeable about different things of that nature.
Keith, I have to tell you, if you'd asked me to write down secretly what I thought the major issue was, I would have named education too. And I think the way you articulate it is really, really on target. And I have to say, quite frankly, I was very, very disappointed in last year's presidential campaign, in which I didn't think either side raised the issue of what are we doing to make sure that our next generation is well educated. And I just thought it was a grave omission, oversight, that we eliminated that. And so I think naming that is really, really critical. I mean, you know, you are Pierre Toussaint Scholar. You went to Cardinal Spellman High School. You're now a junior at the University of Connecticut. But there are probably more people in your neighborhood you grew up with who probably that's not at the moment their path, that they didn't have those educational opportunities. And that is a real issue that I think we have to address. Again, one of the things that we found at Catholic Charities, and now Catholic Charities is a human service organization. We try to help people who have problems with needs. But what we've discovered is that more and more our programs are kind of trying to support individuals and families whose kids are trying to succeed in school, because there's a need for a lot of support to make sure the kids succeed. The one thing that I would, you know, my own thing that we talked about, and I agree with adequate funding of those services, but I also think that every now and then when we try to figure out how we improve education, we put a little bit too much emphasis on, you know, we need more funding. I think we need to figure out how we do the job better. And,
correct.
You know, and I kind of think, I say this with a little bit of not too humble, if you gave me the amount of dollars we're spending on our education system, I could figure out a way without spending more dollars how we kind of could do a better job in doing it. But I think that's a really good thing that you have you've articulated. So, Keith, we have just a couple of more minutes. Is there any final thing that you'd like to kind of share with your listeners, either about Dr. Martin Luther King or anything else?
Essentially, I would just like to say another thing with comparing the past generation to now. Yeah. In the past, a lot of individuals wanted to become like Dr. Martin Luther King and be like Dr. Martin Luther King. Right. My generation, per se, we want to be better than your generation. So we appreciate, we always remember.
We're okay. We're in for a good race.
We always remember. We always honor Dr. Martin Luther King.
Could we at least at this stage in my life not make the criteria running a marathon? Because we're going to lose if that's the criteria. But I think that's great. I think that really is great, because that's right. We shouldn't just try to look to continue. We should try to, you know, look better. So,
and our goal should be to let the next generation be better than we are, so that we're just constantly progressing.
That's great. Hey, Keith Curran, a Pierre Toussaint Scholar, a marketing major at the University of Connecticut, shared with us some perspectives on the upcoming national holiday commemorating the birthday of Dr. Martin Luther King. Keith, thanks so much for coming into
Definitely.
The studio and
Thank
being
you.
With him. So why don't we take a break? This is Just Love. And, you know, if you want to learn more about the topics that we talk about, look at my blog, which is Just Love blog. And you can learn a little bit more about the topics that we talk about. And if you want to, I'd ask you to follow me on Twitter at MSGR. K. Sullivan, and you'll learn a little bit more about the topics that we touch here. We're going to take a break. This is Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. To learn more about what we are doing on Just Love, check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And you can learn more about the topics that we talk about here on Just Love. You know, as we begin the new year, there's new things going on in the world and actually a lot of old things going on in the world. Just because it's a new year doesn't mean that everything's been solved at the end of the last year and doesn't mean that everything is new. And so one of the things that, Tom, I think we got some news, which is a very, very important topic to hear on Just Love, because we do have a very, very important perspective on treating immigrants, refugees with dignity and with respect. And we got some real problems in our country regarding that topic at the moment, and a lot of volatility, a lot of language that is not too good, and some changes in policies which are having some very, very difficult impact on people in our country. So, Tom, but there is a couple of news items, aren't there, with regard to some of those immigration issues? So why don't you bring our listeners up to speed on a couple of those items?
Sure, Monsignor. I guess, well, first of all, earlier this week, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration to revive part of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program, that protects children illegally brought into the United States by their parents from being deported. The Department of Homeland Security rescinded the program in September, as you recall, and said it would be stop accepting applications from people who were already covered under the act to renew their two-year permits. The administration said the repeal would take effect in March. But U.S. District Judge in San Francisco, William Alsup, issued a preliminary injunction ordering the Department of Human Services to resume accepting renewal applications from people who are already protected under DACA, while challenges to the September order work their way through the courts. But DHS does not have to accept new application, the judge ruled.
Yeah, so this is the issue that pretty much most people in the country are aware of because this has received high visibility. So just a little bit of a summary. There are about 800,000 people. Most of them are not children anymore because while they were brought here as infants or children or as youth, they've now been here for a number of years, some of them many years. So now they're young adults who are here. But there are about 800,000 of them who took advantage of the executive order of President Obama, which basically said, okay, if you were brought here as a youth, as a minor, by your parents, okay, we're going to say we're not going to deport you. We're going to allow you to work here as long as you continue to operate in accord now with the rules and regulations of our country. And so that program was going on for a number of years. Then the President Trump came in and said, no more. We're not going to do that anymore. And basically said, Congress should do it. Congress should pass legislation to do it. Shouldn't be by an executive order. So that happened a number of months ago. And so, as Tom mentioned, the Department of Homeland Security, the immigration people said, okay, you're not going to be able to renew your applications anymore. It's going to be phased out in a few months. And so what a judge said is, you know, there are a lot of challenges to that, a lot of court challenges. And so what the judge just ruled last week said, okay, this is going through the courts, but while it's going through the courts, the Department of Homeland Security, you have to keep accepting applications until it's finally adjudicated in the court. So that's where we are at the moment. We can go a little bit further with what we got because, again, everybody's making all types of noises, and I don't have a problem saying I have a clear opinion on this. My clear opinion is that there needs to be a way that these 800,000 kids can continue to be protected, that they are protected from being deported, that they continue to work and make a contribution to this country. The Catholic Church in this country has been absolutely clear on this position. It's been a continual firm position. These kids came here and they were brought here illegally by their parents, but they didn't choose to come. They went because their parents brought them here. So that's one part of it. But the other part of it is it's our own self-interest as a country because these are people who are productive citizens. They're productive members of our society. They're paying taxes. They're working. This is exactly what we want everybody to do. It's to a certain extent, it's kind of, you know, cutting off our nose to spite our face. I mean, it's like it's just to do something which from some type of ideological bias about this. So, I mean, I'm delighted that at least there's a little bit of a respite. It doesn't solve anything, a respite. But, you know, when even President Trump says, you know, I think we should work this out, when the Speaker of the House says we should work this out, when everybody says that we should work this out, and we can't work this out, well, that's a real problem that we have in this form of our democracy, that we can't do it. And then we come up with all these kind of contorted conditions that we're going to place on things when there's a simple way we can do this right now going forward and then deal with the complicated issues going forward. So anyway, enough of that for this moment. We'll come back to it. Tom, what else we got?
We also have, Monsieur, you know, the Trump administration also is doing other things having to do with immigration. Just this past week, also, Secretary of Homeland Security Kristen Nielsen announced her decision to terminate humanitarian program known as Temporary Protected Status for people from El Salvador. The designation is intended to be a temporary relief after a pair of earthquakes that happened back in 2001. Yeah. Past presidents routinely extended the program because of longstanding political, economic, and security concerns in El Salvador. The TPS designation will terminate September 9, 2019 for close to 200,000 Salvadorians who are parents of around 192,000 U.S.-born citizens, Monsieur.
Yeah, and that's a program which, again, to explain a little bit to our listeners, I have to tell you, quite frankly, I don't have as strong a feeling with regard to that as what the right answer is. It's absolutely right what the program is so what it basically says is if there's been a natural disaster or some issue in a home country that will temporarily not force the people who are here to go back because there's an earthquake, there's a flood, there's maybe a political coup or something like that, and people can't go back at least for a while. That's why it's called temporary. And, you know, what usually happens, these disasters aren't solved in a year, so it's renewed, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's a matter of kind of, prudential judgment. There does come a point where you say, okay, the disaster is ended, and, I mean, again, and, you know, maybe there are difficult situations in countries that existed before the disaster. So, you know, it is a question of kind of a prudential judgment to say, all right, the disaster has ended, we're going to no longer renew the temporary protection for a particular country because the circumstances there has changed. And this becomes a matter of a great deal of debate and controversy because people say, well, wait a minute, it's still bad, we shouldn't have people go back. Other people say yes. Yeah. So that's kind of the situation of that. It's not, in my judgment, personal opinion, not quite as clear cut as the Dreamer DACA situation, which it seems to me, you know, from many perspectives, requires a really clean remedy in the very, very immediate future. So anyway, so let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be speaking about New Year's resolutions with Tim Herrera, who is the Smarter Living editor of the New York Times. And we're going to talk about what are good New Year's resolutions, what are bad New Year's resolutions. Maybe we'll get some advice on what we can do that will make our lives a little bit better. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation. Just love, just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world from the perspective of kind of our Catholic wisdom to see how we can kind of reflect on that in light of those values, etc. You know, before we go to our next guest, I just have to tell you, I got this most wonderful, in light of the song that we kind of introduced to, which was Halo, I got the most wonderful Christmas gift from somebody on my staff. They gave me this 5'7" pop-up poster of Beyonce that with a little note coming out of her mouth saying Merry Christmas. Tim, I thought that was pretty good.
That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. So it's good. And my goal is, do you know what Tim Herrera, let me introduce him before I begin jabbering with him. Tim Herrera is the Smarter Living editor of the New York Times and a transplanted New Yorker from Denver for 10 years. So do you know what the theme of the Met Gala is this upcoming year?
I don't.
Okay. It is fashion, beauty, and the Catholic imagination.
Oh.
So you may have known this before you were even born in 1983 or something like that. Mm-hmm. The Met had a big exhibit of art from the Vatican that was there.
Wow.
Okay. So I think they're getting a new batch. But this is a lot of vestments, like from the Middle Ages and some of that old real regal-looking stuff. So the theme of the gala is fashion, beauty, and the Catholic imagination.
That's great. That's a great
so,
mix.
I think I should go.
You didn't get your invite?
but here's the deal. Now, we know that, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z just had twins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're still young, right?
Yeah.
I think Jay-Z should stay home and mind the kids. And I'll escort Beyonce to the Met Gala.
It's a beautiful plan.
I think so. And again, now, I don't know if you know this, but Beyonce has some deep, really deep Christian spiritual roots.
Yeah.
That's her back. But they're not Catholic. They're not there. So she'll be at home with like the Christian part, but I could kind of be like a docent guide on some of the Catholic parts of the theme. I'll do it for free.
That sounds great. Can I tell you, it sounds like a match made in heaven.
I think that's right.
I'm sorry.
Maybe we should put a halo around it.
Perfect.
Anyway, but Tim, thank you. But I do have to ask you, my first question is,
yes,
you're the Smarter Living editor at the New York Times,
I
right?
am. Mm-hmm.
So who's the Dumber Living editor?
You're the first person ever to make that joke. That's crazy.
There's not a Dumber Living editor?
Well, that was what I had before this. Okay. And then I upgraded. I was promoted once I figured things out.
Okay.
No, it's been great. The section has been around for just about 2 years now.
Okay.
We launched it in about mid-2016, spring 2016. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really it just kind of started as kind of a response to what we saw was a real need and desire from readers, which is, you know, just kind of stories that help them live better lives, you know?
Okay.
So we kind of designed the section as somewhat of a little oasis away from the news of the day, you know?
Right.
People come to the New York Times for so many different things, and we want to be able to provide, you know, a huge, vast wealth of knowledge,
right.
But this is something that we had, but we weren't really thinking super deliberately about it.
Are you the founding editor?
Yeah, yeah.
The first one?
Yes. Yeah,
is
yeah.
your kind of brainchild, and you kind of...
Something like that,
no,
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, so tell me some of the... We'll get to the resolution part shortly. But so what are some of the things you look at to put in there?
So I can tell you probably my favorite story that we did last year was a story by this amazing writer named Kristen Wong. She lived in California, and she wrote a story about kind of what boiled down to was the power of saying no to things, right?
I remember that.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Really novel idea. And,
right.
You know, it's one of those things that, you know, you think about in retrospect, and I was like, why didn't that occur to me sooner? But so the thesis of the story was basically that all throughout our daily lives, in every part, professionally, personally, what have you, we kind of dole out these easy and casual yeses. And we commit to things that we don't necessarily believe in or that we don't really have time for or don't really care about. And that at the end of the day, we have this pile of yeses and commitments that we never wanted to really do in the first place.
Right.
So the story was kind of about learning how to effectively and meaningfully say no in order to kind of focus in on the things that truly matter to you.
Right.
And it's difficult. You know, saying no to somebody kind of breaks that implied social contract. And it's a difficult thing to do. And it's like you just kind of have to practice it and really think about how to do it. Yeah. But it's an amazing idea and like something that's really taken hold for me, but something that I still hear from readers about.
Well, I think it, and I think you're 100% right. And in the work that I do at Catholic Charities, mm-hmm. you wind up being with, you know, a lot of different people in a lot of different contexts.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, you know, because you're always trying to figure out, from my perspective, how you can do more good, how you can maybe do something a little bit better.
Right.
You really do like to say yes mm-hmm. to most opportunities because you never know.
Right.
You
right.
never know. But not all of them.
Yeah.
And like it is because the natural tendency, as you say.
It's like a default. You say yes. You yeah, want to help people out.
Yeah, and you do it, but it is incredibly liberating.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's
when you say no and somebody says, "Well, you know, I think I'd like to meet with you about something."
Right,
and
right.
every now and then, probably okay, I'm going to confession. Probably not as pleasantly as I should.
Uh-huh.
I'll just say, "No, I don't think so."
right.
And they say, "What do you mean?"
Yeah.
I said, "Well, you asked if I wanted to meet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to meet."
Right, right.
But why don't you?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I said, no, I just don't want to. You know, it, as I said, I confess I probably should do that a little bit more pleasantly.
Sure.
But I do think it's better than saying, "Oh, yeah, I'd love to meet."
Right.
And then never answering the person's call, never returning an email, mm-hmm. never doing that. So,
right.
But it does kind of break the social
it's difficult.
Contract.
Yeah, and it's difficult to get a no. Like, yeah. Well, why don't you want to meet with me?
Yeah. Am I a bad person?
Right.
And then if you're really in a bad mood, you say, "Yeah, you are a bad person."
right.
And that really destroys the social.
Then it's all out the window.
It's
yeah.
all out the window. But so now, okay. So here's the deal we're making with our listeners.
Yes.
Okay. Because now my fault. We should have done this New Year's resolution thing in December,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't.
Never too late.
No. So what we're declaring for all the listeners of Just Love, New Year's begins tomorrow.
Perfect.
New Year's
I'm all
begins.
For it.
So you get a pass for the first 2 weeks of the new year because now we're going to get the tips on how to do this resolution thing right from the smarter living editor of the New York Times. By the way, it's Tim Herrera who is the smarter living editor of the New York Times. He probably has a little bit of a cultural gap with his fellow erudite reporters who only want to do these serious 45,000 word essays on policy issues, but he wants to do practical things that actually helps me. So anyway, so Tim, tell us tell us about the whole resolution thing.
Well, sure. So really kind of your lead-in just now is really one of the central ideas that I've been writing a lot about and one that I sincerely believe in, which is mm-hmm. that it's fine if the first week or first 2 weeks of January don't live up to your expectations. You know, there's kind of the whole new year, new me motif and yeah. movement that people really latch onto. And they think that come January 1st, like, I'm going to be a new person. I'm going to forget all my old bad habits. I'm going to be, you know, better with money, eating better and everything. Yeah. And, you know, when we put that much pressure on one really kind of arbitrary day, we're just setting ourselves up for failure. And I think that, you know, kind of one of the central ways to actually achieve a lot of the goals that we set up is to be okay with those failures and to be fine with not doing it 100% and looking at the slip-ups we have and when we don't commit 100% and being reasonable with ourselves and saying, why did that happen, acknowledging it, and just moving on. So, you know, New Year starts tomorrow. I love that idea. That's great. Like, forget the first 2 weeks. It's fine.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think from kind of a religious perspective, I think, at least from our Catholic perspective, mm-hmm. we get a restart again with Lent,
mm-hmm.
which begins kind of in mid-February, which kind of says, okay, maybe you didn't do too well, but here's whatever. And what I like about Lent is, now, this is the big quiz I do every year. I mean, traditionally, most people understand Lent as 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's no way it's 40 days.
Yeah.
Nobody can get from Ash Wednesday to Easter and get 40.
Right.
It's either 43, 37, depending on how you count. But anyway, but it's kind of like a time period
mm-hmm.
that, so it's not forever.
Right.
But maybe you begin some good habits
mm-hmm.
that do perdure past the time.
Right. And, you know, things like New Year's or Lent, you know, there's you know, the counter to the whole New Year's resolutions is like, why bother setting them? Nobody ever lives up to them anyway, and it's an arbitrary time anyway, especially for New Year's. But, you know, I think that any time that there's a convenient excuse for people to take a realistic self-evaluation and just have kind of a moment to take a step back and think about the things in our lives that we really want to improve, like, I'm all for that. Like, sure, like, choose a date, whenever it is, that's fine. But if it's allowing people to just have an excuse to have that really introspective thought, like, I think that's great, whatever the date is.
Well, and again, one of the things that I always push about New York, which I mean, I was born in New York. I grew up in the New York metropolitan area. But one of the things I like about New York are the four seasons, because they almost provide a little bit of a natural rhythm to do something a little bit different. And I think you need that in order to make change. It can't all be the same.
I totally, and to give you a little preview, we have like a whole spring cleaning package, because spring, you know, rebirth and all that. And again, it's just like a very convenient, easy excuse to really think about these things.
Well, and again, from the point of view of a spiritual, religious point of view, sometimes there's a version of kind of religion, spirituality, which I'm not a big fan of, which says, well, if you're sacrificing during Lent and you're fasting, you better not be dieting. Why not? Why, if we can get 2-for-1, why not?
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's efficient.
Right. Cram it all in there. It's great.
Right. It really is good. Yeah. So, okay, let's get a little practical now, because you borrowed from some of those business people the notion of smart resolutions.
Yes.
So tell us So we shouldn't do dumb resolutions.
Don't do dumb resolutions.
So tell us kind of what a SMART, how we should kind of do them.
Yeah, so SMART resolutions. So SMART is an acronym. Gotta pull out my notes here. So we can go through letter by letter and talk about
them. Sure, let's do that.
Sure. So the S in SMART is for specific. So, you know, you want to set really specific concrete
goals. So here's how we're going to do this, Tim.
Oh, sure.
You're going to tell me the kind of the category.
Yes.
And I'm going to give you an example, and you tell me whether I'm right or not.
Perfect, perfect. Okay. So starting with those specific goals. So, you know, we want those very clearly defined goals
or resolutions. Okay, so I'm giving up chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Not cake in general.
Right. Or you know, that's a great example of like, say you want to just like cut sweets. Like that's so broad, but saying you want to cut chocolate cake specifically is a great way to approach it.
Right. I'm going to be cutting butterscotch because I never eat butterscotch anyway.
That's one way to go about it, sure.
Okay. So smart, specific.
So we have our specific goals. Okay. We want to make sure that they're measurable. So whatever the goal is, we want to have those markers of success.
Right. Okay. So let me give you that. So I'm not going to eat. I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week.
Right, right. Okay. Instead of like, I want to be in better health.
Right, okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You want to make sure that they're achievable, you know, so you want to aim high, but aim within reason. You know, nobody's going to lose 100 pounds by July, but maybe you can lose 5 pounds a month.
Right.
So something within reason.
Okay.
The R is relevant. And this is one that I think is really important that people tend to overlook, which is that a lot of the times we set resolutions sort of in response to something or in the heat of the moment or just in the, you know, idea that it's the new year, so I have to set goals around certain ideas like weight loss or finances or whatever. Right. But you want to make sure they're important to you and align with your core values and beliefs and things you really want to achieve.
Yeah. So again, I mean, I'll give you one for me because that I've done a few years ago is because my work and stuff, I do a fair amount of reading, but it's nonsense reading. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, you know, one page memos, it's like stuff like that. So kind of one of the things I periodically make a resolution is that I'm going to read one whole book.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, and I usually say one whole nonfiction book and one whole fiction book because to me, that's important. Yeah. It's relevant to me to get a little bit outside of my usual comfort mode of stuff like that.
Right, right. And that's a great example, yeah.
Okay.
And then the last one, T, time bound. So you want to have some sort of schedule for achieving your goals.
Right, okay.
So not just, you know, those kind of ambiguous, well, this year I'm going to do X. You want to have a sort of a calendar or a time frame for achieving those and measuring those specific wins along the road.
So did you make any?
So I have two resolutions.
Okay.
They're more goals. One is I want to train and complete the New York City Marathon, which I'm running in November.
Okay.
And then the other goal I have this year is to, so I'm big into fitness, I'm a big runner. My primary goal is for the first half of the year is to get my half marathon time down to 90 minutes.
Okay.
Which is 10 minutes off my best So it's a stretch goal.
So do you have are you entered into the marathon yet?
I am. Yes. Yeah.
Good.
I'm all set. Got my registered everything. Very excited about it.
Good.
And I have my training plan set for my half marathon time.
Okay.
Starts in February. Got my specific goals. Got my time frame. I'm all set to go.
You know, Catholic Charities, we have 10 charity slots.
Oh.
So people run and they say they're going to try to raise like $3,000 from their friends and things.
Right.
And we've got 10 runners.
Oh, great.
So
great. Yeah.
We had 10 last year. We're going to have 10 this year.
Excellent.
So it's a great thing. So anyway, hey Tim, thank you so much for being with us. And listeners, remember, New Year starts tomorrow, and so we need at least one SMART resolution. I'm going to get it wrong, but you got to be specific. You got to be measurable. Mm-hmm. It's got to be obtainable.
Achievable, right?
Achievable, mm-hmm. And it's got to be relevant to you, mm-hmm. And it's got to be have a timetable for it.
Perfect.
So begin tomorrow, and if you mess up a little bit, Ash Wednesday is coming up on Valentine's Day. Hey, Tim Herrera, the Smarter Living Editor of the New York Times. Thanks. I hope you come back sometime.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This is great.
This is Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Join us and follow my Just Love blog and follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan, and you'll learn more about the topics that we talk about. We try to talk about those topics that are relevant in the world, and they're popular in the world, but we try to bring a little bit of a religious and a Catholic slant to see how we can combine what's going on in the world with our values. Thanks for being with us. Join us again next week on Just Love on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.